Welcome to the Serious TV Drama Podcast, Scott and Dan. I'm Scott, and with me as always, the Drago to my clubber, and the skins and bones to my blubber, it's Dan. Daniel?
Hey, good evening. Good evening, comrade.
Evening. I guess since it's dark out, it's evening. But it's really the AM hours here. Actually, Let's get to it because it is so late, you know. Let's toot the trumpets for our little STV All-Star squad. So first off, she's from the second city, but always first in our hearts, except for Dan. Yeah. Vicky.
Hello there.
Oh, see, now I can hear
you. She's first in my fucking heart, too.
Oh, I don't know.
Aw, thank
first
you.
My heart.
Oh, it's so sweet. And speaking of sweet, we're also joined by the syrupy sweet voice from the... Well, not really anywhere near the bayou at all, but, you know, we like to pretend he is. Cade? Cade?
Hi, everybody. And I'm like 5 miles from a bayou, so yeah.
Yeah, he's pretty close.
I'm actually quite close to them.
And then there's Jason.
Hello.
There aren't any bayous near Jason, but that's okay because the hiking through bayous with all those flies is just fucking lame as shit, so.
When I heard Vicky's intro, I kind of was like, hello, woohoo! That's what it sounded like.
Like Jon Stewart's impersonation of the Queen.
Oh boy,
we're off to a flying start. Well, it's 1:45. It's the show number,
and it's 12:45 the time that we're actually recording this, at least on the Eastern Seaboard. Different for the other kids on the podcast here. So, you know, we are here to talk about three CW DC superhero shows that aired this past week. I mean, there's a very good chance if you stay tuned until the end, I might have a few words to say about a certain other show called Gotham. Although, I guess it'll be listed on the segment breakdown, so you don't really have to stay tuned, but whatever. Before we get started, you know, based on what I've seen over the past week, it feels wrong not to say something here. So, sorry guys, I am going to derail things right from the start with three quick comments before we move on, all right? The new Wonder Woman trailer is fucking awesome. Rogue One looks better with every damn trailer I've seen. And you know what? Doctor Strange is pretty, pretty, pretty good.
That's just it was get decent.
I wanted to get that decent. Out of the way.
I can agree.
Because I knew, you know, because I figured there are some people out there, they put on the podcast, I was like, I wonder if they're going to comment on Wonder Woman or Doctor Strange, because that's what's been most in our minds lately. So I just wanted to get that out there before we moved on to the TV shows. A bunch of you have seen Doctor Strange as well, right? I mean, Vicky, I know you saw it.
Yeah.
Cade, you saw it too?
I have not had a chance to see it yet.
All right, so Vicky, you thought it was decent?
I did. I really enjoyed it. Other than my issues with the casting choices, I really did enjoy it a lot. I thought
all right, that we don't really want to talk that much about Doctor Strange. Okay.
I thought it was decent, but you should not take drugs and go see that movie.
No. Wrong. You should take drugs and see that movie. In fact, pretty much everything we watch, we'd probably be a lot better with drugs. So that's our PSA tonight. Drugs are good. Especially with what's going on in the world now, maybe they're really good. Maybe we should all go to California. All right, can we get to the TV shows now? So we are going to lead things off, as we have been doing for the last month or two, with Supergirl.
We're on it.
Now, the latest episode of Supergirl was titled Crossfire. Here's a little, like, 30-second recap. Basically, a gang of thugs is terrorizing National City with this alien technology that I'm guessing apparently can't simply be melted with heat vision. Whatever. Kara tries to make over Mon-El into a dude version of herself, which I guess makes him Clark Kent Light or something. Jimmy Olsen realizes his existence on this show, I mean, in this town, is pointless and decides he wants to be a superhero. And Alex finally starts picking up on her own sexuality signals. So there's a lot going on in this episode, even though there was like next to nothing with the whole John Jones storyline, which didn't really make me all that sad, quite frankly. Still kind of felt like there may have been too much, but maybe we'll break it down here and we could see what everybody thinks. So I figured we would start with the Mon-El storyline. Cade, you had mentioned, I think, in a previous podcast that he was one of your favorite characters comic book-wise, but we're not talking about the comic books, but I still wanted to hear your take on what you thought of him in this episode and that storyline.
I enjoy his character on the show, but I did find it funny to what you mentioned earlier, that they were trying to make him Clark Kent light. She just figured because her and Clark were like this, she could just force him into that mold. And clearly, by the basis of what we've learned about Daxamites, it's just not going to work for him. He's far smoother. He's not he's not dorky like they come off as. So to try to put him into that place, it just did not work, which led to some of the humor of the situations that he got into. But like getting himself invited to Lena Luthor's party, that's much more him than what Kara wanted him to be. So I'm glad they dropped that real quick. And we're going to get to see him actually try to be himself, go out, make him life in the world. So I'm glad we're getting more of that side instead of seeing him just jump into being a superhero. Actually kind of giving us a chance to give him a foundation of being part of the world first is probably a good thing to do.
Cool. It's interesting that they're kind of using Mon-El a lot more comically than I think anyone would have expected. Vicky, have you noticed that with him as well?
I completely agree with pretty much everything that Cade said.
And that's all I have to say about that. It's going to be that. No, that's fine. By the way, you could have said he's cute. That's fine. I wouldn't mind.
He's adorable.
I mean,
he is.
Didn't you enjoy the fact that they actually flipped the gender for their typical makeover montage with him and then had Kara using her heat vision to cut his hair? I mean, that was kind of something.
Yeah, that was pretty funny. And I thought the scene, the little moment when they were dancing together was very cute.
Yeah, it was sort of kind of sweet. And I think what made that stuff really good was Jimmy Olsen and Wynn's reaction to them. And about, oh, she didn't hook up with us. She's not going to hook up with them. And like, well, now I know she will. Way to go, writers.
You know? Yeah. Oh, gosh. I'm still hoping they maybe don't go that route. But
yeah, keep hoping.
yeah.
Jason, since he's formerly... Oh, Dan, yes?
Fuck Jason. Does the hair have to be cut like that for like Kryptonians and whatever planet this dude's from? I mean, do they have like super hard hair where it's like Luke Cage's skin where like you just can't like get through it? Or
on planets with red suns, no. On yellow suns, how they cut their hair. Clark uses a mirror in his laser vision to shave himself every day.
That's sweet.
Yeah, that's nice. This has always been one of those questions that people have about the characters, and they. You know, depending what era of comic books, they sometimes come up with different versions of how it's done. But what Cade said is pretty much how I know it. They used to do that one thing where they would show him like actually using his heat vision, but it would bounce off the mirror. And I was like, why isn't his heat vision melting the mirror? I never understood that. You know, how does he pick that certain light refraction point where it'll bounce but still burn his own hair? And I never really got that. There was another version. And I'm the longtime Superman fans will probably back me up on this. And this is even more ridiculous because, like, how big was that rocket after a while? Where he had actually fashioned scissors from the metal from the rocket that were able to cut through his hair. Now, then I wonder if you can do it. How did he fashion the scissors? But whatever. It just gets sillier and sillier the longer. Like his glasses, the glass in his glasses were supposed to be from the windshield or whatever from the rocket as well. It's like the rocket just kept giving stuff to him over and over again, apparently. Silver Age. Jason, did you want to say anything about Mon-El before we move on?
Yeah, I really like his character. He's a fun character to have on the show. You know, he's kind of like the female version of Kara, but more of an outgoing, smooth, suave type. Like, come on, the best line of the show was when she asked, "Do you have any protection?" He's like, "What, like a sword?" Come on, that was hilarious. And just his whole reaction is like, do all the women just do this to you on this earth? I just happen to like his character. He's really good.
Oh, absolutely. All right. So let's shift from Mono. Maybe we should switch over to talking about Alex and that kind of storyline, which has gotten certainly more interesting as it's gone along. Now, putting aside the fact that, at times she seems a little clingy or desperate, I feel those are just attributes about her that we just hadn't seen because we never saw her actually interested in anyone before, because I don't think anyone thought she had any interest in Maxwell Lord last season. But I think we kind of need to give props to the show for even doing this storyline, in a format like this. And they are treating it with at least a reasonable amount of delicacy because, it's so easy to go horribly, horribly wrong here. So I from what I've seen and also opinions I've seen online, people seem to be feeling they're doing a good job at this so far. But do you guys think they're doing a good job at it so far? Dan, what has your take been on the whole Alex discovering herself and all that stuff in this episode?
I thought it's been fine for the most part, other than when they had their sitting in a bar talking about crap scene. I really hated the camera work. It was just super lame close up and this really weird under her chin looking up angle at Maggie for some reason, and she just made her look like a fucking vulture. But other than that, being kind of distraction, I think, it's not annoying me, so I guess that's good enough for me. I really, I don't know Alex enough since I didn't watch most of season one to really, be invested in it going well for her, but it doesn't bother me, so that's good enough at this point.
I kind of felt the same way you did, too, with the camera work in that particular scene, and I kind of felt like it was very soap opera-y, that's not really a word, but whatever, toward at least until the end when you're like, well, yeah, you can see where this is going to go. They're going to hook up together. I think I said this last week, too. It's like, come on, we know where it's going. Let's just get to it.
You got to call storylines like this on this show soup opery. Soup opera. Yeah.
You tried.
Anyway. Kay, did you want to rescue this part and say anything here? Hello? Is Kate still there?
Sorry, mic glitched. Despite how badly they shot that scene, I think Alex's moment where she talked about it, we're out saying, she's like, she admitted she always knew something was wrong. She thought it was wrong when really it might have not been wrong. It's just she didn't know what she was actually feeling. She said dating was never easy for her, and it's a way of her starting to admit to maybe that thing, what she thought she was, isn't what she is. And this might be her path, that she might be a lesbian. And that was a good way of describing something to show that, hey, we just didn't suddenly, we're not just going to say, oh, she is. It's, she gets called on it, and she starts to think about it, and then she discusses a reason, why things are so confusing at that moment. What's she's going through, what she's been through. And that was a good thing for the series. That helped make that scene work a lot better than her just saying, yeah, I guess I am. No, that doesn't do anything. That's just you forcing it. This moment, this little thing she had where she spoke about, made it seem more real than what it could have been if they had written it worse.
Right. I mean, you have to keep in mind, and like you're saying, and to go along with what you're saying, this is actually a really serious subject matter. So I would have frankly been annoyed or offended if they did kind of just do it like that. That would be so untrue to what they're trying to do here. And because it is about discovering something about yourself, admitting it to the other person. You confine that to one episode. Honestly, fuck you. That you just offended so many people doing it that way. It's just, that's bullshit. The fact that they tackled a subject like this, that you had a character on what's a comic book show, a superhero show, but she's talking about how she never liked being intimate with people. And you know what she's talking about. And that's a significant thing to say. And people that I've known who, realized that they were lesbians when they were either teenagers or in their 20s, whatever, that's been a common refrain with them when I've talked to them about it. So I was just, applauding that they really dealt with this in a way that I thought was as real as a show like this is going to get. Let's put it that way. It's not, you know, it's not you know, hard edge or anything like that. But by the same time, they didn't dumb it down as much as I would have thought they might have if this had even been last season. So that's at least that's why I thought it. I mean, I don't. I like it. You know, I don't love it because I like other storylines more, but I like that they're doing it at least, if that makes any sense.
Yeah.
Oh, by the way, can I point out one weird thing since we were talking about things that, you know, like camera angles and whatever, which is cool. Can I talk about a weird editing thing that happened then? If we're going to talk about tech stuff here. Since we talked about both Mon-El and then the Alex stuff, did anyone notice in, like, the first part of this episode, we went back and forth between scenes that were clearly in the morning at Catco with them showing up and giving coffee and going outside to get another cup of coffee. It's the morning. And they intercut that between Alex and Maggie in a bar drinking, playing pool, which I'm pretty sure is supposed to be at night, you know, unless they're still doing that at, like, 9 or 10 in the morning or something. I'm pretty sure that's not what they're doing. And I'm just staring, like, what the fuck did you people just do? Who edited this? Did you not know where this should go?
That threw me off.
You know, it's bad enough that most shows were guilty of this. Even the best shows are guilty of this, where all of a sudden, you know, it's outside and all of a sudden it's night. And I was like, wait, how is it night already? How'd that happen? You know, I noticed that in a lot of shows that we all watch, whatever. But this, you didn't need to, it made no sense. Okay, anyway, I'm guessing I'd be shocked if any of us had anything much to say about the, you know, the thugs with the ray guns kind of stuff.
But, no.
But I do think the big revelation in this episode about who that, the evil Cadmus scientist who I was saying, well, they haven't given her a name. Why haven't they given her a name? Without realizing, oh, there's a real reason they haven't given her a name. I was surprised. So I was curious what you guys thought of that, and that's definitely a different element in the show here. So as far as the now named evil Cadmus scientist is concerned, what did you guys think? Jason, what did you think about that?
Personally, I wasn't really too surprised about it because
you're so they're both new. Smart. No, I'm just kidding.
Well, they're both new characters for the show for this year, so I wasn't surprised that they're linked together. I guess I'm surprised that they kind of do it so quick, but I can see why they did it though.
Okay. that is podcasting gold, Jason. Yeah. Thank you for that.
Yeah, so. Very profound there, Dan. Wow. The good work.
You want to expound on that or you just want to leave it there?
No, he's gonna do cartoon.
I think I'll just leave it there for now. That's okay.
I can see why they did that. Thank you. I'm just fucking with you. Someone, Vicky.
While I was taking my notes for the episode, I realized like I don't think we know her name, do we? But then when I kind of saw it coming a little bit at the end, so it was a little predictable to me. But it's gonna make things you know more interesting.
Question:
what is her name?
Question. Our name is Lillian. It's Lillian Luther, who's actually from the comic books. Question. When you say predictable, are you saying from the moment she appeared on the terrace or before that?
I think...
Because the moment she appeared on the terrace, it said like 20 seconds later. So, ooh, wow, you figured something out 15 seconds beforehand. Not really a bit. But if you figured out like halfway through the episode, that's a different story. So that's why I'm asking.
Yeah, no, partway through the episode, okay. I was kind of thinking about that. So,
you guys put way more thought into the show than I do when I watch it.
I'm good. I'd like to point out I didn't realize it till she walked in the room at the end of the episode. That's when I figured it out.
Yeah, when
I was not.
Well, yeah. Hear something even
I wasn't
lamer.
Expecting that to happen.
I didn't even realize that it was the same character. I just sat there like, oh, look, this is Lex Luthor's mom. This is going to be some serious shit going down. That's what I thought happened. I didn't even know. I mean, yeah.
Was it the lighting? Maybe the lighting made her look
different? Yeah, we haven't seen her in the light. We haven't seen her in the light before. So, I mean, there were some similarities, but I'm just like, oh, you know, this
is the same.
Also,
she usually wears like black, and I think she was wearing a white outfit that time. That's very good lead to. Yeah, that could lead. I could understand that.
Oh, boy. Okay. Let me just get this out of the way. Does anyone feel like saying anything about Jimmy Olsen and his little Luke Cage Jr. act in this episode?
I mean, no. I feel like it's very sudden. But as you said, they have to give him something to do. Let's put him in an outfit.
But the fact that the whole hood thing, I mean, whatever. Okay. God, just get him off the show already. It's just pointless. And I don't care that he's going to be the Guardian. Who cares? Go away. This show's about Supergirl. You don't need a lame-o like that around. Okay.
About that. When they had that, like, Jimmy Olsen camera being broken scene, I actually laughed out loud when he, like, was doing some, like, you know, kung fu moves. I'm just like, you know, I haven't seen him do anything except, like, get friend-zoned, like, because I didn't watch season one. So, like, I just, you know, I wasn't expecting, like, anything at all. So, I mean, like, when he, like, kicked the back of somebody's leg, I mean, I literally laughed out loud. It was just fucking funny as hell.
Yeah, it's just ridiculous.
And the character and the actor has no charisma, so who gives a fuck?
Wow. He has no charisma. I don't know if I go that far.
Yes.
But
he's just there to look good.
I've seen him on other things. Good. I've liked him on other things. I just think they've just given him a thankless part. And what's shocking about that, it's Jimmy fucking Olsen, and you couldn't do a decent... They couldn't come up with a decent role for... To me, it's like a big black mark... maybe I shouldn't say the phrase black mark here. It's a blot on the fucking show, as far as I'm concerned. I wish they got rid of him and kept been able to keep... what's her face?
Callista Flockhart?
Yes.
Cat Grant?
Yeah. That one. Anyway, okay. In the spirit of keeping things moving, because it's after 1 a.m. By the way, next week, unless I'm crazy, I think we're going to get a version of the Parasite.
Yes, we are.
Okay.
It has to be. There's no... It fits all the things.
I'm pretty sure that's Parasite. Okay, cool. Yeah. Excellent. So I guess we can go to our little scorecards here. So I guess we'll do the ladies first thing as usual. Vicky, what did you think of Supergirl?
I'll give it a 3.5.
Cade?
I'll give it a 3.
Interesting. Jason?
3. Love Mon-El.
And Daniel?
I gave it a 3.5. I actually enjoyed the episode more than I have some of the previous ones, so it was fun.
I'm going to give it a 3.5 also because I know I liked it more than last week. Therefore, I need to bump it up. So, 3.5. All right, then. So, next up, we have Arrow. Now, the title of this episode was So It Begins. And again, my little quickie recap here. Prometheus finally makes his presence felt, and it turns out he's into anagrams. Who knew he was a puzzle nerd? Maybe he really is a Batman villain after all. Or maybe he's just a Babylon 5 fanboy, as Felicity says. the recruits find out about Oliver's serial killer-esque past and are shocked to learn that there's gambling. No, wait. Never mind. And 5 years ago, Russia, we finally meet fucking Drago. I mean, Konstantin Kovar, who I'm assuming his middle name must be Kiev or something like that. But screw that. People like me or Dan, we're going to call him Drago because that's who he is. So, what did we think of Prometheus finally getting his groove on in this episode? And what did some of you make of the revelation at the end? Dan, it's probably fresh in your mind. What are you thinking of Prometheus at this point?
I knew we were going to know who it was by the end of the episode with, like, the obvious arm being cut thing. Because, I mean, you know, this is just what they do on this kind of show. But I wasn't expecting it. It makes sense looking back a little bit, at least as to like this episode. But I'm not sure if I'm a big fan of what they're doing yet. I could see it going, you know, going very, very badly. Yeah. So hopefully it does not.
Do you think he's actually consciously aware of it, or we're talking about Quentin Lance now? Or is there something at work here? I mean, I can't believe he's just dressing up as the guy and whatever. I think there's more to it than that. There has to be.
Yeah, there's probably something going on, or maybe somebody's trying to convince him that, he's him and it's somebody else or something. I don't know.
Right. See, I actually got, you know what, I'll admit, I actually was confused for a second because when Prometheus is fighting with Artemis on the subway car, and the whole slash in the arm thing, I thought she slashed the arm and you see blood and then it goes away like it healed or something. And maybe it's just the way the shot looks. I rewound it a couple times because it's something that's later in the scene still doesn't make any sense to me every time I try to watch it. But I guess I was wrong since they show Quentin with the wound or something. I'm not clear on it, but at least we certainly got a lot more about the villain this episode, if nothing else. Cade, what did you think of Prometheus?
I like Prometheus is playing a game with them. He's not just trying to attack them. He's playing into his mind. He's trying to defeat him mentally more so than physically by doing this and basically turning the team on Oliver, losing their trust in him. And I don't think it's Quentin Lance. I think that's part of the game because to give that to us, it seems almost obvious that it could be him, but we've had nothing to show that it makes any sense, and suddenly in season 5 it's him. But to do that would also play into the game he's currently playing. He's causing doubt. He's spreading mistrust, which is one of the reasons why he might be a better villain than I was expecting. If he's not going to just beat them brute force like it seems to have done, he wants to play a game with them and have them break him mentally before he ever tries to take on Oliver physically. Just to take Oliver's head out the game as much as he can, hoping that's how he gets him. Just destroy the man, not worry about killing him, just destroy everything he's tried to become in these past 5 years. That's what it looks like Prometheus is doing, and making Quentin Lance look like he could be him is going to be one of those things. This could be someone who's Oliver starting to get something back with, and to cast doubt on that, that's brilliant. That's a good way of removing allies from Oliver in this moment where he needs people the most with someone like this out there.
Right. Yeah, it's interesting. Plus, it can't be him. It just, just doesn't make any sense.
It could be. You know,
I think I know who it is.
We've already recognized that doing drugs is good, so we're going to encourage the listeners, if you drink a lot, you can become a kick-ass supervillain. So start drinking as much as you fucking can.
You suddenly become a ninja-esque warrior, with no League of Assassins training.
Jason, I think I also might know who it is. Listening to the guys talk, I had an idea. So I'm curious as to whether or not we have the same idea.
I actually have a guess, too.
My guess, you want me to say it first?
Well,
I'm going to say it's Tommy Merlin.
That's been a popular thought. So, and that would make.
I know it's not unique or anything, but.
No, I wasn't knocking you opinion. For that. I wasn't saying that wasn't brilliant at all. It's all. No.
Oh, you want to know my guess? About it,
no, I want to
hear. Go ahead, Dan. Go ahead, Dan.
No, explain your thing first, and then I can.
Well, it's kind of you. This ties a lot of stuff back to season one with the book and stuff like that. And of course, Tommy was killed. I'm going to flash my quotes up in the air that he's dead at the end of season one. So, and he's wearing a knockoff of a Malcolm Merlin's outfit, which is his dad. So that just got me thinking that's the possible tie to it.
I don't see it as a knockoff of Malcolm's suit. It's very similar to Oliver's first season suit. Not to discredit the suit thing, but that's not to discredit the idea. But yeah, Malcolm's suit was different.
Either way, it's still better than Hawkeye's lame ass purple suit, right? Okay. Let's keep going.
Tell me about it.
Hold on there. I can't believe you
gay.
Brought that back up again. How dare you?
Stupid as hell.
Speaking of things in season one.
Yeah. I'm gonna guess now that even though I've already predicted that it's the DA, I'm gonna guess that it's gonna end up being Oliver Queen's father. It just kind of if you thought about like what the character's motivations would be, and plus he's killing people on the list, that maybe it makes sense.
That's a really I love the idea of it being his father, because His father would be one of the only people who would actually know about, it would make sense that he would know about the list at all. Because that would be the problem with the Tommy Merlin. They're like, how does Tommy Merlin know about the list? How does he know the names on the list?
Unless he found the book.
Did he find the book? I don't remember that. Or do you actually remember him finding the book?
I don't remember. I don't remember.
I don't think he ever found the book.
But we're saying that.
And in Russia this season, we did see somebody else had the book from Bit too. So, I mean, you know, they did take the book from him briefly and just like throw it in a corner or whatever they did. So they could also try to tie this into the Russia thing as another possibility. It could be Drago. I don't fucking know. It'd be awesome if it was fucking Carl Weathers.
And they have shown in a previous episode that they are going to be tying the Russian stuff to the current storyline when the reporter saw that photograph of Oliver in Russia when he was supposed to have been on the island or whatever. So we know that the two storylines are going to converge in some way. I love the idea of it being his father. I mean, Tommy's like the obvious idea, which is probably why it's most likely going to be him, especially now. Now he'll probably even blame her for Laurel being dead too and all that kind of crap. But I would love it. Plus, wasn't it Jamie Sheridan who was his father, if I recall?
Yeah.
I would just like to see Jamie Sheridan again. he's a good actor. I'd just like to see him on the show. Or at least do the alternate universe thing where we know that he's the Green Arrow on another planet or something like that. Didn't they? I think they established that in one of these shows.
He was Earth 2 Green Arrow, yeah.
That's it. That's right. Yeah. Still hoping that'll happen. All right. Last few weeks, we've been kind of focusing, at least one of these little Arrow segments, on the heroes. You know, and this week, you know, from Rory being funnier than I ever realized and Renee being more annoying than I ever realized. Hey, did my eyes and ears deceive me? Or did they actually give what approximates center stage to Evelyn or Artemis on this episode? Something we've been kind of wanting to see, like, forever. Or at least forever as far as the season is concerned. I mean, we can talk about their reactions to how Arrow used to kill and all that other crap, too. But we keep bringing up how, are they going to do something with her or not? Because if not, then kill her off. Oh, I mean, that was me saying that, actually. So, Vicky, I know you've been kind of outspoken about this, you know, with the girl power thing and whatever. So, were you happier with the way she was treated this episode than previous ones?
I was very happy because they gave her something to actually do in this episode and gave her character development. I completely agree with the quote-unquote B team. You know, being angry about being kept in the dark, even though, you know, I feel like Oliver had his reasons. Again, they also had a right to, you know what was going on. But, you know, and I was glad that she was upfront about it. She's like, I don't know if I can do this. But then was like, you know what, I'm not doing this for you. I'm doing this for me to, you know, to help people. So, yes, I was very happy that they gave her some, you know, like you said, they gave her basically center stage, her own storyline, more or less.
Yeah, of the recruits that were, you know, obviously they were all upset with the situation, but she was the one who got, like, the real scenes. She was the most outspoken one. She was the one who spoke to him one-on-one. So I was like, oh, they're really giving her something to do here. She's the one who ended up fighting Prometheus in the train car and all that stuff. So I was like, oh, this is kind of what we've been wanting to see. And it also, like, I thought it was smart because, like, for me personally, I didn't really care about her at all as a character until this episode. And I'm like, oh, okay, she's got a little bit of moxie. There's something going on here. Didn't realize how young she was. Now I feel a little weird about that. But putting that aside, okay, cool. So, I felt they finally gave me a reason to give a fuck about her character, which I before this I didn't. So good for them.
Did anyone else think of, like, at the end of the episode they just kind of, you know, made it? It just looked like she wanted to bang Oliver. Did anybody else see that? Or?
What?
No, I didn't get that at all.
Oh my God.
Yeah, well, we'll watch it again. And she's looking at it. I'm just like, you know, bam, like, you know, want to bang Oliver, or like, oh, this is Stephen Amell. This is a good looking guy. Fucking, this is a fun scene to act. Yay.
Okay. The only thing that this episode brought out for me about her was how young she was compared to everybody else, and especially in the train car scene, whereas, like, she is clearly outmatched against Prometheus. and she was in real danger there.
Yeah, yeah, she handled herself pretty well though.
She did, but I got the whole feeling like she's in real danger here.
Yeah, definitely. I could definitely tell that, you know, they would she was gonna lose any kind of fight against him, but she did put up a good fight.
Yeah. And that subway conductor, whatever, he was useless as fuck, so he wasn't gonna
What is he supposed to do? He's driving a train.
Well, he's supposed to call 911. I'll just stand there, like, shaking in the corner.
But I didn't... Hey, you know what? Can you guys explain something to me then? And I rewound it, like, I don't know, 4 or 5 times. I still couldn't figure it out.
How did I ever get in the train?
Well, that's one thing. It's also... Prometheus getting off the train and the way that was done... It's kind of nonsensically shot, and I didn't understand what just happened.
Yeah, I didn't know what the fuck happened there either.
The other question I have is how he had time to attach the bomb.
I don't know. Plus,
there's no way that the physics of the parachute arrow are going to work out with how fast the train
moving. Hush. That was the saving grace of the fucking scene.
It was cool, but it, yeah.
Well, you might as well knock everything in Batman's utility belt while you're at it. hey, if we're going to talk about stupid stuff with the heroes, am I the only one who thought the entire scene with them, like, saving people who are just freaking out that there's a serial killer? So it was pretty much the we don't like the Second Amendment scene because people are just randomly shooting their guns.
That was ridiculous.
It was the stupidest scene I've ever seen. It was the most fucked up
riot I've ever seen on TV. It was so fucking ridiculous.
Nothing made sense about it.
Who are you shooting at?
I feel like it just seemed like some people are just running around tents, not like running in any direction, just making circles on occasion. Like, they won't hit me if I keep running in a circle.
Again, it's a bunch of random citizens who I didn't get the impression were to get necessarily allied together, and they're just shooting, but they're not shooting at anything in particular. were they banditos? Were they bad hombres? Were they just shooting? And they were
the three amigos.
I didn't understand it.
They're trying to do something like, the whole city's freaked out about this, Ninja Star Killer, and then just like they didn't like quite tie it off right, so it's just like a bunch of like randos just walking around with guns, shooting for some reason, and getting their ass badly kicked.
It's like the one guy's like, "I have the right to protect myself." It's like, okay, so, so is Star City? I guess they have the carry permit thing going there, or whatever they call it, that whole thing, the concealed weapon thing. Oh my god,
it's a real shame they put that in there because they had a couple good scenes before that where the housewife got killed.
It was a lot. Yeah, that freaked me out. That's the one of the only notes I wrote, and then I erased it. It's like, holy shit, did Prometheus just kill a soccer mom? What the hell is going on with this show?
He did.
It was pretty sad, though, you know, seeing all those guys get their asses kicked, you know, considering how small their dicks must be to need to open carry like that. So, you know, it's double rough for them.
Yeah, I noticed that because I know at least one of them got kicked in the balls and they didn't even react.
Nope.
All right, so then you had that. also, let's you know, what that we should get it out of the way now. The flashbacks, and we finally got Dolph Lundgren to show up on the show. Dan, I gotta tell you, I was more impressed than I thought I'd be seeing Dolph Lundgren, who I've always viewed as sort of kind of a joke, you know, outside of Rocky IV. It's like, oh, wasn't he like in one of the He-Man movies or something? I don't remember anymore. But he definitely was
He-Man.
But he definitely cut an interesting presence on the show. How fucking old is that guy now? Anyway, is he like in his mid-60s now? I'm thinking maybe.
Oh, yeah, but, you know, those guys, they're so roided out. Like, they're like Vince McMahon. They'll be, like, 95 years old, and they're just a fucking big old bundle of muscle, so, yeah.
You're saying he's on the roids? No.
No, I'm sure, you know, I don't know. But he's fucking, you know, he looks pretty good. And he definitely, you know, he kind of feels like we enjoyed the Chad Coleman's character and like the imposing presence that he had. And mm-hmm. he definitely feels like, you know, even though we won't see him a ton, presumably, because I wouldn't think the flashbacks are going to take center stage. But he just, you know, he's kind of filling in that role for me. Just like, okay, this guy's a badass. He might, you know, just fucking break some necks, you know, here and there.
Yeah.
It's, yeah, just good to see him. So
I like the whole he's slowly getting undressed, whatever. I thought, are we going to see, is he going to go down to being ripped muscle-wise? But they just loosened his tie instead. But, yeah, I think it's like the first interesting villain in a flashback probably since season two, when it was basically, you know, essentially Deathstroke more than anything else. Although I guess there was the other stuff with the submarine ship, but who cares? But, yeah, I thought, again, invested in the flashbacks. They really don't take up that much time on the show, which is also a nice thing. But I'm kind of curious where they're going to go with it. And, you know, so I enjoyed that a lot. I know some people out there are still anti-flashback, and if this was a different season, I'd be right there with you. But I'm enjoying it. The only thing I wish is Ollie didn't have yet another stupid-looking wig. But other than that, I'm really enjoying the flashbacks.
I don't think we'll ever get rid of the stupid wigs, though, for the flashbacks.
Wasn't there a moment in one of these flashbacks where he got his hair cut, and I thought, oh, now we're not going to have that anymore?
Last year's, but then it grew back.
Oh, but then the flashbacks were so bad it didn't matter. That's right. Okay. we were praying for hair at that point, bad hair at that point. Okay. Is there anything else about this episode worthy of comment that I'm forgetting here that anyone wants to mention? It's okay if everyone says no, and we can just move on. It's fine.
I'm good.
I'm gonna say
not enough Ragman.
Well, that should be our comment for every episode because I really like Ragman.
I like how Oliver's decided Ragman's like the go-to member of the rest of them. It's like I'll take Diggle and Ragman. It's like okay, you've got the right pair here. We understand. You've picked the good guys. Picked the A squad.
Well, he's the guy with actual power. He's the only guy there with actual powers, yeah. So I can do something.
It was cool the way Rakeman disarmed somebody at that like Second Amendment circle jerk orgy, and when Oliver shot the arrow like right into the dude's gun too. That was pretty sweet. So.
Oh, you know what? You're absolutely right. I should have made a note that as dumb as that scene was, we did get a couple cool moments like that. The arrow and the gun thing was fantastic. I love that. And then, of course, then we also have to have an incredibly dopey cliche moment of, well, they're at his little, you know, where he creates his works of art. So, of course, Renee has to act like, I don't get it. I'm like, really? Really? You have to have a moment like that? You know, idiots. But I liked him giving them his dad's schnapps.
Schnapps. Yeah.
That's when we find out she's 17. I can't remember if there's anything. I mentioned the Babylon 5 reference in the description, which I appreciated, and I love that Curtis got a nice too soon joke with Curtis in the joke in the episode as well. That was pretty sweet. All right, so I guess we can just move on to the scores then. So again, we will start with Vicky.
I'm gonna say a 4.
Yeah. Cade.
I'm going to give it a 4. Arrow's continually impressing me this season.
So strange.
I know. I can't believe I said it.
Me too. Jason?
I'm going to go 3.5. Just not enough Ragman. Man. No. Or a wild dog, either.
Well, I was happy with the not enough wild dog.
I just love the fact that he's on the show. Yes, I'm going to say that every single fucking week. I'm going to say it, so you just get used to it.
I'll add it to the list. Dan?
I'm actually only giving this one a 3. I thought it was kind of underwhelming for the most part. There was some stuff that I thought was cool, and some of the weird stuff, like the explosions making like a flame, like So It Begins thing, was kind of like really lame and really cool at the same time, but you know, but there wasn't anything in it that I felt super, you know, just did a hell of a lot for me. So, you know, it was fine, but it wasn't great for the answer.
Affleck Daredevil, that's what that was.
Really lame, but really
the crow lame. Did that before, thank you.
Okay. Alright, so we can now move on to what
your score.
Yeah, what's your score?
Oh, I'm giving it a 4, I'm sorry.
There we go.
Wow, how did I forget that? Oh, stupid. Okay, so... Oh, wait. I know this is when we would normally move on to Legends. Dan, did you have to... Were you going to give a quick thing about last week's episode?
Yeah, I'll try to squeeze it out before I have to leave here. It doesn't matter when I watch the fucking episode. I'm not going to do this again.
You did it again.
Last week's episode was very, very good.
Dan was watching it Tuesday night.
I realized that it was, you know, basically that was their Halloween episode, since it was Halloween week, and you know the zombie thing kind of fit that theme. But I thought it was really impressive the way that like it ended up, like the actual like historical like slavery stuff was like the real horror, and the zombie stuff was more like, you know, played for laughs. So I thought that was kind of an interesting thing to do for their, you know, spooky Halloween episode, to make it like serious and just like make the other stuff kind of fun. So just another week where everything worked extremely well, and they used all the characters, you know, in a great way. And yeah, the Ulysses S. Grant was kind of you know, like, I don't know, like, yeah, like some from like 1995, and not super like awesome, yeah, but.
I wish they could have gotten a guy like the guy on Hell on Wheels, because it would have had a bit more. He had no, you know what? I hate to use a silly word for this, but the character had no gravitas to him. And I'm thinking, if you're Ulysses S. Grant, you should have some sort of presence, and that he could have been anybody. So
yeah, he was just like me wearing a Union General's outfit. Wasn't impressive at all.
I really want to see Dan in a
Union. Not enough beard.
But is it weirdly surprising that this show is, it feels like it's getting better from week to week. It's really strange. I don't know what to make of it.
Yeah, it's crazy. I'm you know, I'm looking forward to watching the episode that you guys watched tonight, and unfortunately I wasn't able to watch it, so Scott, why haven't I leaped?
Oh, it's not the hell.
What's going on?
God. Maybe your job's not done here yet.
I love the spacking noise.
Oh, God. I guess we're doomed to be with Dan for the rest of the podcast after all this week.
Guess I'm still here.
Well. Everybody seems so excited about it. Like, oh God!
I just love when they're and our podcast suddenly gets really surreal. It's like, wait, what?
Drugs are good, kids.
God, I hope there's music behind all this. Anyway, so hell, let's get to the latest episode of Legends of Tomorrow.
We're on Easy Street, and it feels so sweet, 'cause the world is but a treat when you're on Easy Street.
Now, the latest episode was titled Compromised, and a quickie recap here. Thanks to Nate's time seismograph, the team travels to the White House in 1987, which is the eve of when Reagan and Gorbachev were signing their very first treaty to reduce their country's nuclear arsenal. Turns out Damien Dark is an advisor, which means he's up to no good, and they still don't know that he's also working with the Reverse Flash. Meanwhile, Ray's trying to fill Leonard Snart's parka, and why they didn't have him in a parka on the show, I don't understand. This is December 1987, Washington, D.C. They could have gotten away with that. Missed opportunity. Meanwhile, Nate's wishing that he could get stories about Grandpa Steele from Vixen. Martin runs into his younger self yet again. Sarah tries not to give in to her dark side. And a member of the 1942 JSA is apparently still alive and kicking some 45 years later. So, let's get to what I thought, and I'm suspecting the majority of us might agree here, don't know, what I thought was the coolest thing in this episode right off the bat, the way they bookended this episode with Damien Dark and the Reverse Flash. And, oh, by the way, we can even toss in talking about Sarah's encounter with Damien Dark as well. So, hey, only because you just watched it. And because I want to make you talk some more. Dan, how did you feel about the Dark, Reverse Flash, and all the other stuff relating to that?
Yeah, well, even though you told me that Ziggy said there was a 77% chance I'd leap after talking about the last episode, I did not. So I liked what they did with that. I mean, just using both villains that, you know, don't suck because they're not Vandal Savage or Hawks. They don't suck. It's good use. Sarah, her revenge not being physical, I think in the long run ends up being like not a good idea. You don't tell everybody all this shit ahead of time. It's just, you know, I understand the principle and it definitely affected the character, but you know, I'm guessing I could see that biting them in the ass in the long run.
Yeah, it's interesting because she basically goes against what she had when she agreed earlier in the episode with Martin about telling Jax about, you know that you can't screw around with time and you can't change history where we're supposed to be. And that's kind of what she ends up doing to a certain degree here. So, yeah, I definitely agree with that. Cade, since you're also a fan of both these villains, whatever, are you liking how they're moving forward with that storyline and how the villains are being used here so far?
Yes, but I enjoy how this episode took them from like where they had this kind of partnership, we'll work together because it's going to fit our goal, to where by the end, there's something much more grand there Thawne has planned. He's got something much more in mind, and he's going to let Dark in on it. And instead of Thawne basically meeting up with Dark along the way, he's going to bring him with him. They're going to be able to cause more havoc this way than they already are. And these two together, this alone would have been a bad enough problem for the show. But to think of what they would do more with these two, that's scary. Like, because these two are causing enough havoc as it is to keep the team busy. To have more people, that's going to be great when that starts to happen. Also, I like Thawne running around without his Reverse Flash suit on. He finally has a chance to change clothes, and he's actually wearing something different, which is very interesting, because then it lessens the chance of people maybe somehow from one of the legends recognizing him, which is a good thing.
Right, right, yeah, because they mentioned a speedster. Not that she would have known who he was anyway. I just got to mention the fact this episode starts off, and you know we're in Miami, 1987, and Damian Dark is in full Sonny Crockett wear.
Raided his closet.
But I also will point out, because obviously they're doing a whole Miami Vice goof there, but I'm also going to point out that it's 1987. He's also wearing David Addison from Moonlighting's sunglasses. So they're covering a couple of 80s TV shows all in one right there. Because at the time, if you were, you know, my age at that time, that was kind of iconic. I admit I bought those sunglasses too. But anyway, I'm really enjoying those two pairing up. And I'm looking forward to when 2 becomes 3, becomes 4, and so on. So that should be pretty fun. Next thing I wanted to cover was, because the one good thing about the show is sometimes the way they tend to split up the characters into little groupings, so it's actually an easier show for us to talk about to a certain extent, but I think the next thing I really want to talk about is the stuff that dealt with Nate. Should I call him Nate? Do we call him Steel or Citizen Steel yet? Is that not correct to call him?
I don't think they've called him that yet. So I think Nate's a good way to keep describing him at this point.
He made a joke about being Citizen Steel.
Yeah. He joked about it.
It hasn't officially happened yet. Although I get the impression from a photo that was leaked earlier today that he will eventually be called that, I guess. So Nate, Vixen, and Obsidian. And so now I know why because I remember months ago hearing that Lance Henriksen had been hired to be Obsidian, and I kept going, that's very weird, because he's kind of old, and now we know why they got him. And I love Lance Henriksen in pretty much everything he does, so he's been around long enough, certainly. So what did you guys think about that whole storyline and dealing with the fact... And feel free to touch on the somewhat confusing thing about there being a facility, a secret JSA facility, and that she would know, although she was from 1942, that they would have kept going on and on and on all the way into the 80s. I was a little weird. I got confused by a lot of that, but I just kind of let it go because I was trying to hurry up and finish watching it. So I don't know who to go with first. Kate, what did you think of that stuff?
This theme, I will point out, yeah, it's weirder yet. How long has Obsidian just been hanging out in that gym by himself?
No, you don't think that. That's...
I know it's not, but seriously, just he happened to be there on that day they showed up.
That's a little to do.
That's a little weird. But beyond that, it was I like the fact that they did move one of them forward to where she had a chance to interact with one much later on and to kind of find out what happened with the team. You find out what happened to Commander Steel, and it gave you got a moment where you got insight into the time period of the 50s when Obsidian mentions he was not chosen to go on that mission for a very specific reason, mm-hmm. because at that time, people like himself were being questioned by our government, whether they could be loyal. Were they communist? That kind of thing, which at that point, I thought they were going to skirt around the Obsidian fact of like, because in the comics, Obsidian is gay. It's one of the things he's been for a long time. So I thought that was going to be their way of hinting at it. But I liked how at the end they basically had him say it. It openly was there. They didn't play coy with it. They did the first time for those people might get that reference and realize what he was saying. But to just come out and say it, it was nice that they kept a very core part of that character for so long and kept it in the show. It was a small thing, but it really made him, it kept him being Todd Rice Obsidian. Right. It was something more to him than just his powers. That was another thing he's known for. And to see that carry over, and to get to see him use his powers in here, get to see Obsidian move around and do some things. That was a nice little touch right there. And you also found out the relationship between Amaya and Rex, how they were going to leave the JSA because they wanted to be together. And that helps definitely understand why she took it far harder than you would have just. I know a teammate dying would hit you. But with that knowledge, you can see why she was on that warpath, why she got on the ship trying to take out these people, because she, the love of her life just died. She was out for revenge.
Right. No, I agree with everything you just said. By the way, I would point out that I'll pretend I'm a writer on the show or something and say, hey, well, you know what happened? When she punched in the code to access that door, that probably set something off because probably no one's done that in years, whatever. And he knew, so he was made aware of it. And considering his ability, he could just poof over there. I shouldn't use the word poof, but you know what I mean. Oh, Lord.
Yeah. That's the impression I got from that, too. Yeah,
bamf over there, you know.
That's highly possible, because we did come back to them later, and they're looking through pictures, so they could have been doing that for a while.
Yeah, it looked like they were going through files and finding out stuff, and there just happened to be pictures just laying around, but whatever. They're like, oh, look, it's a big gym. Okay. All right. Yeah, I agree. I like the Nate character a lot. I like them utilizing Vixen better. Although I did get worried about one comment in the episode towards the end with her and Obsidian, where he makes a comment to her about, I can't remember the exact words, but it's about her love life.
Right. Yeah.
And the first thing I'm thinking is like, no, don't, please don't encourage her to hook up with someone. It's going to happen. No. Cause she should, but here's the thing. Now that we know, about her relationship with our man, I think for me, at least, it wouldn't make any sense for her to, in any point, you know, start having feelings or hooking up with one of the other members of the Legends. Because, as far as we know, the love of her life just died in front of her just, you know, days or a couple of weeks ago. So it would be kind of weird if they did that. So
yeah.
So I'm kind of going. Oh, by the way, can I just say one thing about the show and then we'll move on to the next thing? I noticed that they are rotating the people who do the opening spiel, you know, the little thing before the show starts. And this time it was the actor who plays Jax on it. However, they always come to that same line, and it's kind of really annoying me for some reason. Where they're very self-deprecating about themselves because, you know, we're a bunch of outcasts and misfits, whatever. You know, so please don't call us heroes. We're legends, and I'm like, hey, you know what? Legends is actually a bigger sounding thing than heroes.
Yeah.
Like, that doesn't make any sense. It's like, we're not heroes, we're legends. Like, shut up, idiots. It's like, we're not mortals, we're gods. No. Just doesn't make any sense. It's like, dear writers, you're morons. Anyway, on a lighter note on the show, and there was plenty of lightness on the show, I think, we had that kind of goofy story of Ray trying to live up to be the next, I think he says Colonel Cold at one point. And I remember, I was thinking of you, Kate. I was like, oh, if he says Citizen Cold, Kate's going to fucking...
That would have been so much better.
Between the stuff with Rory and Ray, which I'm kind of divided on myself, quite frankly, and then, let's just put it in here too, then the stuff with Marty Stein, why this guy keeps running into earlier versions of himself. You know, forget the Doc Brown reference. He's like Marty McFly. How many times he runs into himself at this point on the show? So how did you guys feel about that? I'm going to go with Vicky first on this one because I haven't heard her voice in a while.
I like the storyline with Ray and Mick. I thought it was a little funny how Mick was saying, you need to be like Colt. No. You can't be like Cole. It makes me feel feelings. You do yourself.
It makes me feel feelings. I think, here's the thing. I think some of those scenes play funny. I think the part where Ray actually says, I'm trying to be cool or something like that. That whole sequence was kind of funny. But then there's another part later on, or maybe it's seconds later, which I thought was kind of dopey. You know, like the line about "Don't call me haircut" or something, I don't know. I really like Rory's character, and Ray I go back and forth on, so I don't know what to make of it. I was amused for more than I wasn't, I guess. Right, but you like Ray, so
yeah, I do. But I think it was pretty well done. I will say, though, on the older Stein versus younger Stein thing, it's getting a little because, I don't know, like you said, how many times can he run into his former self? Like, I get it. He was, you know, very well known. You know, he's a top scientist or whatever, but doesn't have to be everywhere, you know, that they're in the past.
Go on, I'm sorry.
I don't know, that he's constantly having to tell his younger self, you need to do this, you need to do this. It's getting a little, I don't know, they need to maybe stop with that.
Well, and again, it's kind of like Sarah's mild hypocrisy, if we say it's mild, whatever. Martin's much worse, because Mr. scolding Jax about you can't change this and you can't change that. It's like, dude, you keep interacting with yourself. You keep saying stuff to yourself and showing yourself things you shouldn't see. Dude, you're potentially changing your own history again. Haven't you gone down this road already? But you know, I'm sure the show is kind of going to forget about it and just move on to the next time period. I tend to give the show more slack than I know some of you, like Cade does, because I'm like, whatever. But sometimes it's like, okay, at a certain point, it's like, stop it. Just stop. Just stop.
Yeah, like how much of current Martin Stein is because he's told himself how to behave and all the, like, you start to wonder how much of his current personality is based on his old self telling his young self to be this way. This weird circle that just keeps looping on itself of how Martin Stein came to be is basically what we're seeing.
Yeah, pretty much. Dan, are you still there?
Yeah, I'm here.
Is there anything you wanted to say about these yokels before we move on?
I think one thing that the show is really doing this season that they struggled with last year, and it's something that I've seen a lot lately as I've been watching rewatching Deep Space Nine, as you have. But this season they're using the formula where they're finding characters that have good chemistry together, and then they're just sticking them together and, you know, letting it work and developing the characters that way. And right. It's a smart approach, and it seems to be working really well for them. So, and you know, even and by doing so, it's just, you know, fleshing out the characters better and making the show feel like a lot more you know, just smarter show. So I'm glad to see that they're, you know, pairing everybody off in little cliques and just, you know, going with it. And as of now, since none of them are hawks, it's fine.
Right. You know, you know what's interesting also is the fact that, I mean, as much as I never minded, I liked his character and whatever, not having Rip Hunter is not hurting the show.
No, it really isn't. They have a nice move there without him.
Because, you know, the problem with Rip Hunter's character, I'll be negative about him for a moment, is, the actor is fine, and I know his background, I don't care. And the character of Rip Hunter, I know that from the comics, and that's fine, whatever. But too many times on the show, it's the same beat with him. It's him scolding everybody, you know, like a schoolmarm or something, withholding information, and then telling him at the end, "You're all great." And it seemed like there's like 8 or 9 episodes that kind of have that formula with Rip Hunter. So I'm kind of happy we don't have that.
I'm kind of wary of them name dropping him like every week in some fashion. I mean, I get what they're trying to do, but at this point, I just kind of wish they just, like, you know, stop acting like they're all fucking in love with them and need him back desperately and just, you know, go kick some ass. Well,
no, I think it's better that they keep themselves in check. That they're not relying on one person to keep themselves, that they've all kind of looked at each other and goes, we have to keep each other from doing stupid things.
Yeah, but they keep saying, like, oh, but, you know, Rip, you know what Rip would have said, blah, blah, blah. So they're still freaking, you know, anchored to that.
Rip would have just lied to them like he always did. But, I think another thing is that they're keeping his name alive because I guess sort of kind of he's supposed – one of their missions other than trying to find this – you know, the time traveler and the aberrations is they're supposed to be trying to find him, right? Yeah. Didn't they say that in a previous episode? Because I always find it interesting, like, they never really seem to be doing much to try to figure that out. I mean, I figured they would be doing something with Gideon or something, and I don't get it. I think the writers are like, no, we don't really want to be bothered with that. We'll get to it when we get to it. And I don't mind. I don't honestly. I could give 2 rips about Rip Hunter. You know, quite frankly, on the show, they're doing so much better without him. And what Dan, what you said, absolutely. It's interesting seeing these little combinations. And there is some genuine, either, you know, just chemistry between them. I mean, I never would have thought of putting Rory and Ray Palmer together, but they're kind of fun together. It's an they're two very exaggerated characters, but they're kind of interesting the way they watching them interact. And the new characters are actually working well on the show. I like the new Vixen. I like Nate. Damn, the show is actually, I can't believe I like this show. Anyway, one question.
I'm looking forward to whatever kind of crossover that they have planned with the 4 shows. And Jason, I know you've already read the script or something, so don't tell me about it now, please. But
did you guys see the ads for it? By the way,
I did see the show.
Okay. But the show is good enough now where the concept of it is much more exciting than it was going into the season, because, you know, all 4 shows are doing pretty good, you know, except Flash is just kind of okay. Yeah. But I'm looking forward to seeing, you know, whatever they do. I'm expecting I'll like it, and that there aren't going to be a lot of weak spots in it.
I hear the Hawks are coming back.
Shush.
Shut up. God damn it. You're so banned from the podcast. Anyway. Oh, by the way, so I only have one question about this episode. I'm going to throw it out there. Did anybody or everybody or most of us or some of us, however many, did anybody think the box that Damian was trying to, that little box, do you think that maybe that might have been a ring box? It looks like a ring box. And if it's a ring box, they might think, hey, maybe that's Obsidian's dad's ring?
I did have that. Yeah, that kind of crossed my mind at one point.
I was really expecting them to open that box and to see that. Now, it might be the only reference at all. I was really looking forward to it. I couldn't believe they didn't do it. Does anyone else think that, or just me and Kate?
Who's Obsidian's dad again?
They don't know who Obsidian's dad is, so that doesn't. That's probably why it didn't register.
Sorry. Okay. We mentioned it in previous episodes.
It's Alan Scott, the Golden Age Green Lantern.
Oh, I will say, though, I'm kind of glad that they didn't go with the cliche and kill Obsidian, because I think that would have been a little too easy.
Yeah. Well, I was like, oh, shit, Lance Hendrickson's one and done here. Oh.
Let's put it this way. I think the CW really doesn't want to be killing any more gay characters this year. So I was pretty sure that's pretty hopeful that wasn't going to happen either. They've gotten enough really bad flack about that. So good on them not going that route. They've racked up enough on that one. All right, I feel like we've actually covered the whole episode. I mean, next week's Jonah Hex. So we've got that, and I didn't see Rip Hunter in the ad. That doesn't mean he's not going to show up. Again, don't really care, but I think they're actually going to be dealing with a storyline which has been done in Jonah Hex comic books to a certain extent. Which the reason why I'm mentioning that in any way is because that means, unlike the previous Jonah Hex appearance, where I felt he was kind of more of an ancillary character, if that's the right way to put it, I think his storyline will be more the focal point of this episode, and that's what I want. I want it to be a Jonah Hex episode, not an episode where Jonah Hex happens to appear. So I'm looking forward to seeing what they do here, especially since the show seems so much better than last season, so maybe this will be so much better than the last Jonah Hex episode. And I'll take that as agreement. So let's get to the scores. Vicky, what did you think of Legends of Tomorrow?
I will give it a 4.
Cade?
I'll give it a 4.5.
Cade really loves his Legends.
I really do. This is a surprising thing to say. The fact my two favorite CW shows in the Arrowverse a week are Arrow and Legends of Tomorrow is the most surprising thing I think I could say for myself. Those are the two I look forward to.
He gave it a 5 last week.
Yeah, that was insane.
That was amazing. I was impressed. Good job.
Well, Dan, you're actually here and you've seen it, so...
Huh. Yes. Well, I'm not going to tell you till next week. Unless I want to think about it. Okay. No, I'll give it a 4 too. It was quite good, but it wasn't, you know, like epic, like holy shit, good. It was just like, yeah, this is really good, and everything is working well again.
Yeah, I'm exactly right there with you. I agree. I mean, I wouldn't say there was anything jaw dropping about it, but I was so pleased with so much of it, and other than mild mocking, there was nothing that made me kind of cringe. And plus Lance Henriksen, so what, just this show had Lance Henriksen on is pretty fucking cool, you know. Speaking of '80s stuff, the guy, you know, people go to like Millennium and all that other stuff. I'm thinking Aliens, so you know, which was '86, right? So perfect.
Yeah, and Alien Resurrection in the '90s.
Oh God, well, I fucking hated that movie so. Anyway, I'm giving it a 4 myself, so, wow. I mean, I know What's-His-Face didn't see it, so we'll assume he's going to give it like a 5. No, I'm just kidding.
Wow. It gets all the stars.
We are fucking loving this show this season. So crazy. All right, then. Okay. Look at that. 3 shows. Oh, awesome. So, guess what? It looks like we finally... might have, you know, quote unquote, a few minutes for me to, how should I put this? Revisit a show I've chatted about here from time to time. So, you know, everyone, if you want to take it a little easy, settle back, have a nip of, I don't know, cocoa or cognac or whatever it is you people drink out there. So I'm going to offer up a few new or old words on my favorite show of all time, you know. I want to say a little bit about Gotham. We're on Easy Street, and it feels so sweet, 'cause the world is but a treat. Now, okay. I know that I'm the first to say that, you know, this medium of TV or even movies, it's far different than books or graphic novels and comic books. So it's always best not to judge one on the other. You know, either it's streamlining or condensing a massive novel or taking some creative shortcuts with decades of a character's comic book legacy. You know, I've said it many times before, unless a change is really utterly stupid or pointless or just counterproductive to what should either be a good character or a plot, you know, that's why I give the writers of whatever series it is, you know, a certain amount of slack. It doesn't matter what the show is. It could be The Walking Dead, it could be Hannibal, it could be The Flash, it doesn't matter. And specific to DC shows, I will acknowledge that in the DC comic book universe, specifically over the past, 25 or 30 years, I guess, maybe longer, I can't really remember. There's been any number of stories which people have now come to call Elseworld stories, where characters can be reimagined with somewhat more interesting ideas than maybe they used to do in the old Marvel What If concept. So that's how DC was able to tell stories ranging from, you know, like what might have happened if the rocket carrying the baby Kal-El crashed in Russia instead of Kansas. Or what if Batman was a hero in the 19th century, or and stuff like that. It wasn't about canon, it was just about the writer's imagination, and they were kind of fun. But the thing is, those Elseworld stories, and believe me, there are some really great ones, they tend to just be one-off stories, or two-parters, or maybe a mini-series covering a handful of issues, but that was it. But with a show like Gotham, I cannot apply that thinking. And if that makes me a hypocrite, don't care, because right now they've probably aired, I don't know, probably over 50 episodes, I think, at this point. So it's really harder for me to look at this show and say, oh, it's just a little alternate universe version of Gotham City. So, you know, like a what if almost every fucking villain that ever existed years before Batman ever appeared, and apparently his presence had no impact or bearing on them whatsoever. You know, I give the show credit for not being boring. And I'll give the show credit for some really nice cinematography at times and some set design stuff. And I like that how they've tweaked parts of New York City to really have that Gotham flavor. But seriously, fuck the rest. Because right now, this show, I find it to be the lowest, the most basest form of storytelling. When you don't know what the hell to do with your characters, with your villains specifically, because the show is all about the villains, quite frankly. So they just say, we'll just make everyone crazy killers. So you have one season, the Penguin, oh, he's a raging psychopath, and he just fucking racks up more blood in his entire 75-year, than he's ever done in his entire 75-year history. Oh, you know what, let's make the Riddler a homicidal maniac too. What? But that's before this season. This season, they bring on the fucking Mad Hatter. And this guy, he ends up with more demented bloodshed and lunacy. He might as well have been a character on Hannibal than Gotham. I just was stared at the screen going, what am I watching here? It's just, it's making me, it's just annoying me. It's just fucking irritating the shit out of me. Then they come up with this incredibly idiotic idea, you know, because they already established that they had this little girl on the show who's like probably 10 years old, and she's going to be Poison Ivy when she grows up. And I was like, all right, that makes sense. Bruce Wayne's 13, she's 10, I can see that. I don't know why they changed her name, but who cares, it's fine. But then they came up with this idea that she ends up being touched by some monstrous guy on the show that can physically age her. So she ends up aging like, I don't know, 12, 15 years, and now she looks like she's in her mid-20s. But the weird thing about that is she's got the body and, I guess, demeanor of a 25-year-old. But she probably still has the mind of a child. That's really fucked up the more you think about it, because she's clearly, you know, out there having sex and whatever. Like, that's so creepy. What's going on here? And then if you assume that this fucking city is where Batman shows up, you know, 10, 15 years from now, so when he encounters Poison Ivy, she's going to be a total cougar now? Every villain on the show is going to be at least 10 to 15 years older than Batman, other than Catwoman, some even older than that. Am I supposed to pretend there's no Batman? Because you named your show Gotham, it's really hard to forget that. And I don't understand what the fuck they're doing sometimes. And then, forget Batman, the fucking stupid waste of time of having Jim Gordon on the show. He leaves the GCPD every half season. He's no longer a cop, then he's a cop again. It's just become repetitive and stupid. Like this season, he became a bounty hunter. It's like, no, he's a cop. He's going to go back to being a cop. How long is that going to take? Oh, look, now he's a cop again. It's an insipid storyline. It's not interesting. It's just a waste of time. And let's settle something once and for fucking all, because I think he's gotten a free pass from a lot of people, including even me, maybe. I like Ben McKenzie on Southland. It was a great show. He was just right for that part, the idealistic cop, blah, blah, blah. But you know what? His Jim Gordon is a fucking bore. The show isn't boring, but he is, because he's totally one note. And quite honestly, I don't even buy the very sound of his voice that he puts on for the show, because he doesn't sound like that. It sounds like a badly put on voice for the show. I find him about as compelling on this show as Mark Wahlberg was in Planet of the Apes, or pretty much any Mark Wahlberg movie after Boogie Nights. I don't know, what's her name? Marina Backgammon, Baccarat, whatever fuck her name is. The fact that she actually fell in love with this guy on set, so he must be really interesting off screen, because he's a big on screen. He's just awful. I mean, luckily everyone else is so colorful on the show, it balances it out, because he's just, you know, he's mayonnaise, just blah. Oh, one other thing, a couple things. This season, I had no problem with them insinuating that the Penguin's gay and has a thing for Nygma. That doesn't bother me at all. It's fine. I thought that was an interesting thing to do. But then they handle it so childishly. What we were saying about Supergirl earlier, that's 1,000 times more mature than how they're dealing with that on this show. And, you know, it's like something out of a really bad sitcom, the way they're dealing with it. You know, and quite frankly, I really like the actor who plays Penguin, but so far this season, I don't fucking care about him anymore since he became mayor. And by the way, the fact that they took a storyline which was first done on the 60s TV show and then got ripped off by Tim Burton in a 90s movie, and now they're doing it again here, it's like, why does everyone have to make the Penguin mayor on every freaking live-action version of this character? It's really annoying the shit out of me. And Dan, you're not aware of this, but I'm bringing this up just for your benefit. What, they're doing something on this fucking show this season, and they're thinking they're being really fucking cute about it and clever. They're making all these fucking Vertigo references with Nygma and this new love of his life because she looks just like the old one who he had killed. They've even had a scene with the room is lit with this fucking green neon from outside, which is like, and I went, oh, look at you taking an iconic moment from a great movie and bastardizing it for your piece of shit TV show. It's not clever. It's annoying. If Kim Novak was dead, I'm sure she'd be spinning in her grave right next to, like, Hitchcock and Jimmy, who are, I'm sure, are spinning in theirs. So, anyway.
Ooh. I'm just imagining, like, when they do a Dexter movie, then they can, like, have a Psycho homage in it, and but use the same writers from the last season. So,
yeah. It's right there. So, anyway, that's really, I think, all I feel I need to say about the stupid shitball of a show that I continue to watch, because apparently, even after this week, real life just isn't enough to piss me off. So, I don't know, maybe I need to start drinking again while I watch Gotham.
But Scott, you're a pain in the ass sometimes, but we don't hate you. You don't need to hate yourself. Just fucking kick Gotham to the curb. You deserve better.
I honestly don't know why I'm watching. Now I'm getting to the point where, like, I don't have an excuse for it anymore. The whole Batman connection so isn't working for me. It's like, I might stop. I'm this close to stopping. Yeah, I don't know. Maybe I'll stop. But I'm stopping this rant, so that way we can wrap things up in a timely fashion. Before, is there anything else anyone feels the need to say, or are we done pretty much with our podcasting here today, tonight?
I think I've said it all.
Yep, we're good.
See, I was pretty sure Vicky had a lot more to say. I'm just kidding. if you enjoyed this podcast, you will probably enjoy joining our Facebook page. You can find us on Facebook. We're the Serious TV Drama Podcast. Like the page and join the conversation about any number of TV shows we talk about there. You can also find us on iTunes the very same way. It's the Serious TV Drama Podcast. You can subscribe to our feed there, as well as rate and review us. 5-star ratings are always appreciated. Less, not so much. And you can also follow us on Twitter. We do tweet from time to time. Our handle there is at STVD Podcast. It's STVD as in Serious TV Drama. And a new thing that we're doing at the end of our podcast is Vicky is doing some promotional work for our show. Tell us about that one more time, Vix.
Yes, you can find it on popculthq.com.
Yeah, I actually went onto the page and I started checking all the links because I wanted to see how much writing you actually did. It's like, oh, look, she wrote two sentences. No, I'm just kidding with you. That was very good. I enjoyed it. I'm actually curious because now that we have a new logo, I'm wondering if that'll start appearing on the page instead of the old one that we always had. So I actually have a reason to go check once we put it. All right. Well, as I often do, I'm going to start the round of good nights. Considering how late we started, we're not ending too badly. So thanks for everyone sticking with us until the very end, which is very impressive. When was the last time all five of us stuck through to the very end? That I don't remember.
Last year.
Okay. It's the word rhetorical.
I don't know these words.
I know. Anyway, well, good night to everyone out there, and good night to the four of you.
Good night.
Good night.
Good night.
Thanks for joining us for episode 145. Good night.
Should be on these.